So, Kirk, we're going to be talking about polarization and also about how to counterbalance it.
Yes. Yes. So, I can begin then with how I feel like so many of us are susceptible to polarization today, or what I call the polarized mind, which is the fixation on a single point of view to the utter exclusion of competing points of view. Because in my study of this problem and in my own life, I have found that fear and anxiety seem to be at the core of the polarized mind, at the core of...
So is it okay if I interrupt you just a little bit? Since
sure.
We're talking about something that affects all of us, or many
yes.
of us. It's hard to listen to it just objectively as if it were something outside. And so, for
yes.
instance, when you're talking about the polarized mind and fixation,
mm-hmm.
I know that I'm noticing in myself a sense of, am I being judged for the part of me that is polarized, actually, and you're also talking about fear. So I want to introduce the notion of we're in dealing with this. We're
yes.
trying to create also an atmosphere of safety and inviting
yes.
people who listen to it when they notice something happening inside,
yes.
whether it's maybe a sense of. Guilt or shame or whatever about it or blame
yes.
to take it as part of the process of exploring this.
Yes, I'm with you, Sergei. So from that standpoint, certainly polarization is grounded in our fear and in what is brought up in our bodies. And I believe that to address this fear and this, you know, impulse that comes up, let's say in you, when I talk about polarized mind, we need to give that room to explore it further and what that brings up for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're willing to do that or if that's appropriate for this format, but that's certainly something that comes up for me as you respond
yeah.
in that way.
Yeah, so let's follow it. Let's follow it and see where it leads us.
Okay.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing you say is a sense of now... in a way, making it more like a personal exploration of what's coming up related to polarization and the fears that are related to it.
Yes, yes. It's right now we're getting into a very intimate level of this problem,
mm-hmm.
which I believe we all share.
mm-hmm.
We all have these points of fear, of... great uncertainty, perhaps a sense of diminishment in some way. But I'm curious if you're willing to look at a little further what is coming up for you.
Yeah. I am willing. And with the concept of the full disclosure is that, you know, the same way as if, you know, you as the person interviewed did not like the interview, we would not be publishing it. So I
yes.
feel that I have that same caveat that I'm very willing to take the experience with the understanding that if it didn't feel right, I would not publish it.
Okay.
I am also finding as a resource in doing it,
mm-hmm.
the sense that what is happening is partly exploring my stuff, but then I'm also a stand-in for the audience. And that as you're exploring, asking question, it gives an opportunity for people not so much to just observe what's happening for me, but also to check inside what's happening for them.
Yes, I'm very much with what you're feeling and stating. And I want to, you know, really check in with you as we go along as to whether this feels right or appropriate. Yeah. And if it's also getting at the kind of inquiry that that you're interested in too.
Yeah. So it feels it as we stay with it. I'm feeling myself settle a little more, and okay. So it feels more right.
Okay.
And there is more of a sense of curiosity.
You feel a sense of curiosity?
I feel more of a sense of curiosity about it. Mm-hmm. And I also feel a sense of, you know, again, that sense of being a stand-in for the audience as opposed to, you know, just it's like being focused about me, but kind of being an entry point for other people. So on the whole, it feels inviting.
I'm glad to hear that. And I also feel like you're a stand-in for me to a degree as well in terms of feelings that I can relate to.
Yeah.
I have a sense that is happening. So what we could do is explore for a few minutes here first of all, perhaps if you're willing to identify where you feel this fear or this tension in your body. And from there, perhaps you can expand some on what that brings up for you, especially other feelings or body sensations or images that come up for you.
Yeah. So I feel some energy in my legs. There is kind of a movement that feels like if I was standing up, my legs would be walking. And so walking away, so this kind of a running away, evading, fleeing.
Yes.
I'm feeling some energy in the shoulders, and it's also kind of a if I follow that energy, it's like there's a rotation in my shoulders and kind of a movement of my shoulders and my arms.
How does that feel just to move?
And so as I move, you know, what did not occur to me before is when I move my arms this way. It feels consistent with the movement of the legs. And now I'm experiencing myself being in movement, my whole person being in movement. Whereas before it was as if, you know, the torso was, you know, just stiff and the legs were almost like a cartoon where the legs would be walking. But now my whole body is moving. And it's actually it's a more satisfying feeling. Like instead of just feeling that energy kind of leaking out, I have more of a sense of owning it.
Okay. And if you can stay with that feeling of moving and of owning your energy right now, see what other feelings or sensations, images come up with that.
So with the sense of owning that energy and of moving. And as, you know, as I am talking, I'm also in movement. I'm not stiff.
Yes.
So the sense is a sense of being in control Uh-huh. I'm not control in a sense of, controlling, tightly controlling from fear, but right. more of a sense of, having the possibility literally of closing and opening the door, kind of calibrating my interaction.
Okay.
And a sense of my muscles being toned, just kind of not tense, not flaccid, but right. Ready, poised. So a general sense of being poised and essentially at ease in the environment.
Uh huh. So I sense a strengthening in you as you stay with that motion.
Yeah.
And with that awareness of your body in motion and being in the motion.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Strength that is not stiff.
Right.
Strength that's not rigid, but strength that is kind of fluid.
Fluid. So if we go back to my original statement about polarization and the polarized mind, and then defining that as the fixation on a single point of view to the utter exclusion of competing points of view. I wonder what that brings up for you right now, as you hear.
Just as you're asking the question, the sense, it's like it feels so different from the rigidity, from the notion of fixation feels rigid.
Yes.
And this, in contrast, has a looseness.
Yes. You said fluid.
Yeah, there's a fluidity as opposed to rigid, and a strength and fluidity as opposed to maybe rigid and more brittle.
And it sounded like you had some feeling of, I don't know, what came up for me was anxiety about polarization, or maybe shame. Was that?
Yeah, there's something about my system of value is to be open, to be, open, not just in terms of hearing other people's points of view,
right.
but open in terms of, having a large field of vision.
Yes.
So like literally just a, large perspective. And polarized feels like a restricting of the field of vision, something similar to the blinders that are put on horses to keep them on their track.
Yes.
So it is, on the one hand, I value the sense of, in a way, being focused on what feels right, which is the positive side of polarization. But on the other hand, I'm also experiencing it as a state in which I am deprived of the broadness, the range, of the fluidity, of the openness that I value.
Yes, and so what I'm hearing is you're feeling more of that fluidity and openness as we immerse more in this question.
Yeah.
But you're also in touch with that, something's stuck around the term being polarized and the sensibility of being polarized. That's there too. I mean, I sense that you're sort of shifting back and forth as we talk about it. You can relate to that narrowing, but you also can relate to this motion and the looseness.
Yeah. So the if we were talking content or stimuli, triggers, I would probably pretty quickly or at some point kind of go back to but there's kind of a sense of a right and a wrong.
Yeah.
And And the positive about it is a sense of being focused and not being, going into many directions, but kind of having a sense of focus where it's needed, and especially a sense of focus as a counterpoint to things that would seem like they would be muddying the water. So that's something I consider a positive quality that I value in myself at that moment. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I would also experience kind of something of that rigidity where, in a way, it's just like my eyes would not be having that wider perspective. My neck might be more go in a single direction. My shoulders would be tighter. And that feels like an impoverishment. Compared to that fluidity.
Yes. So you're in both places. You can relate to both places.
Yeah. And in an ideal world, I would like to not be drawn to the limiting effects of polarization.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. I hear that. But that doesn't mean that you would cut off that capacity to focus.
Yeah, but I would not want to cut off that capacity to focus. Because otherwise it goes to, you know, that sense of everything is equivalent. And so at an intellectual level, I can understand the notion that truth is relative. I know that there are different points of view. But as a way to function in the world, I find it useful to have some values.
Yes.
And so, but the question is that, to be able to function without, and to have these values without being triggered, because in being triggered, it feels like it's losing actually agency.
I think this is a key point that what I'm hearing from you, and I very much resonate with this, is that I would like to have access to a capacity to focus and to feel a clarity about certain things, to appreciate an alignment of what I'm feeling in my body and what I'm speaking to the world, a clarity of values. But that's very different than feeling compelled to have that position or those positions. So I see a distinction between compulsion-driven focus and narrowing, and more or less chosen, conscious engagement of such positions.
So when I'm hearing you speak, there's a couple of words that I resonate with a lot. On the one hand, you use the word compulsion. And on the other, you use chosen engagement.
Yes.
And so in the compulsion, I feel like, and I would add something. It's not just a compulsion, like an inner compulsion, but also something like a manipulation, like a sense that in a way we're not necessarily manipulated by one evil person, but there is kind of a system, a loop, of the polarization that pulls us inside it, and we lose ourselves in it. And so, so it's not just compulsion, like say the compulsion to smoke a cigarette.
Right.
It's something about being pulled and losing that consciousness of choice.
Yes,
conscious engagement feels like a wonderful word to describe the opposite of it.
Yes, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you bringing in a more systemic view of compulsion that is not necessarily just coming from my own fear, but it can also be coming from someone else's fear.
Yeah.
That I'm being sucked into or seduced into.
So I actually appreciate as you amplify it, mm-hmm. because then it helps me resonate more. As you say, being sucked into or being seduced into, and mm-hmm. there's both components. So there's something about, in a way, that force larger than myself.
Yes.
And is not just a metaphor for an inside drive, but exactly. is something that's a, you know, some kind of a social force, some kind yes. of a, like an air current that would suck us yeah. in, or...
Or political force.
Yeah, yeah.
And this force could well be orchestrated as yeah. well to do that very thing to me. And it catches me because the advertisement of the orchestration is so powerful,
mm-hmm.
Or the messaging of that yeah. orchestration. You know, it... I think of, this is an old analogy, but Barry Goldwater running for president. That's interesting. This was actually a Democratic presidential ad. I think it was equating Barry Goldwater with the nuclear bomb.
Yeah. Where essentially they presented the nuclear mushroom.
Yes.
And say, would you trust this man, or would it, this yeah. is what would happen if you did. Yes.
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 And so automatically, if you choose Barry Goldwater, you choose to be nuked.
Right.
It's pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we have a lot of contemporary examples also.
Yes. Yes.
That are, some are confusing because we live in a time where we do get so many inputs from so many different sources.
There's an intensification of fear.
Yes.
And for sure. There's the difference that I have very little respect for the fears of the Mexican rapists.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I am very influenced by the fears
mm-hmm.
about, you know, for one thing, what would continue with the environment and climate change if, you know, we continue to have more of this regime and so on and so forth. It's not a question of saying, and therefore all fears are meaningless.
Yes.
But there is something about maybe being so driven by the fears being whipped into a frenzy by a sense of the polarization, the resistance, that sense of, you know, just the same way as in marriage therapy, the four horsemen of the apocalypse include the dismissal, you know, that sense of banging your head against the wall, and it exacerbates the patterns. It feels like there is something similar that's happening to us.
I think so, and I think what you also point out is the importance of how you're responding to the information coming in. So are you responding in a discerning way, in a deliberative way, let's say, in a way, or in a pauseful way? Or are you responding in a very knee-jerk fashion?
Okay. So that's very nice. I'm only played back mm-hmm. to see. So I feel a sense of calming as you state this,
mm-hmm.
because before, there was no interval between the stimulus and my response.
Yeah.
And you're introducing the notion of a space here.
Yes.
In both, where I say, okay, so I'm noticing my response, and I want to understand better where my response is coming from. in the sense, not intellectually about the validity of the argument,
right?
But is it a response where I'm experiencing myself under stress, under fear, or is there more of a sense of groundedness and presence in my responding?
Yes. And are you able to take some time to look at the various facets of the messaging or the propaganda, whatever you want to call it, that you're receiving with your whole body experience, your whole body?
Yeah.
Just intellectually, not just sensate.
Yeah.
Not just feeling wise or in terms of your mood per se. But the whole gestalt, if you will, almost doing like a body scan.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm hearing that, and I'm hearing even upstream of it, the sense of simply having the intentionality to take that moment and to focus the attention on having that body scan that you're talking about, that already itself is something that I find calming. Because then, you know, before, my attention gets pulled to the sense of clear and present danger with the threat.
Yes.
And this is saying, look, you have more time than you think.
Yes.
You can stay with the process of being curious about how you're experiencing it.
Curious, good word.
And curious about not just ideas, but the physical experience of it.
Yes.
And so there's a redirecting of my attention from, look, the danger is coming right here. I got to do that. Wait a minute. What is happening inside here? Okay. So that I find very, very, very powerful. You know, in principle, I believe in that.
Yes.
In practice, it is something that I find hard to apply in this circumstance.
Yeah, I do too. And I think something that's relevant here is I've been involved with a grassroots organization called Better Angels for the last half or so. And Better Angels is a group that is founded on, I would say, marital couples counseling principles, but also principles of core human relationships, or I should say humanistic principles of relating. And it's about bringing liberals and conservatives together for living room style dialogues. So it's an attempt to present an alternative to the kind of, you know, food fights and knee-jerkism and quick reactions that we have with each other when we are presented with an inflammatory or provocative material from either side, and to provide a space, if you will, a safe space where one can take some time with an issue without interference from the other person, and in a face-to-face, person-to-person manner, describe one's own concern about a given political issue, usually. Now, I find this very a very powerful antidote to the kind of a reactivity that we were just talking about, which I feel can lead to well, clearly, it's a very destructive kind of behavior. On the other hand, I've been developing my own slant on this, where I bring in I would say, more of a presencing element to this. So that it's not just talking about, but it's also helping people to stay more present to their bodies themselves as they are describing their concerns and as they are describing what comes up for them when the other brings up their concerns.
Yeah.
Whereas Better Angels is more focused on a group process and it is more content, but it still brings in, you almost can't avoid it. It brings in these very important pregnant pauses, if you will, mm-hmm. that allow people to do some form of scanning of whole body experiencing as opposed to just reacting. And the premise is really on coming from a place of curiosity about the other. And mm-hmm. I take that to be the other in oneself as well as the other person.
Yeah, where it brings me, I mean, I want to acknowledge the difference between the Better Angels situation
mm-hmm.
and the other one, which is more personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I really value an experience like the Better Angels in the mm-hmm. sense that it gives people a chance to see the other as a human being as opposed to othering the other.
Exactly. And that's often what happens, by the way, through the end of the workshops.
But it also helps, you know, articulate what the difficulty is I think that when we're in the process of polarization, mm-hmm. there's a sense that the other one is we demonize the other in some way mm-hmm. or we're scared of them. But also we feel very strongly, and probably that's a reason why we do what we do, but a sense that the mm-hmm. other is totally closed to us. And so there's kind of a despair quality of, but, you know, you stand in my way and you do this and look what's happening and I can't budge. I think that the value of what we're exploring, of mm-hmm. that presence, of paying attention, that putting the curiosity on myself.
Yes.
Is that when I'm doing that, I'm in connection with somebody who is interested in me and is listening to me.
Yes.
Which is me listening to myself.
Yes.
You know, as opposed to being in a situation where I feel like I'm banging against a door that's closed and I'm being ignored. So essentially, I it's not just I'm in relation with myself, but I'm also in a relationship where I'm experiencing listening and being listened to. And in that sense, it feels similar to the Better Angels, but an inside way.
Yes, and in that sense, I feel like it is somewhat of an antidote to the stereotyping.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another key term here to describe this fixation, the stereotyping that we so often engage in.
Yeah.
Which comes out of fear, in my experience. We don't feel we have the time to pause and to really feel into a situation. We've got to react.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in some way trained to react because we've never really been taught the value of the pause mm-hmm. in these kinds of situations. And also because the messaging is so potent and so omnipresent.
Yeah.
In political rhetoric and just even in everyday interactions with peers, friends, family.
Yeah. So I want to take a moment to kind of think about in trying to articulate what that experience has been for me. You know, just as we went through it.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, I was not in the middle of a polarized moment because I was, you know, discussing something with you, the mm-hmm. element of fear that came in was not so much related to the polarization, but to more of the opening up, disclosing, going into maybe potentially vulnerable area.
Yes.
But the vulnerability itself is a link to the experience of being polarized, because the experience yeah. of being polarized has to do with fear.
Yes.
And so while it was not quite that experience, there's enough of a felt similarity that I could create a bridge to be more connected to the polarized experience as we were talking.
Yes.
In talking about it, I could see the rigidity that could come uh-huh. from it, uh-huh. and the narrowing.
Yeah.
And that what I found very helpful was the suggestion to redirect my attention
uh-huh.
to my own inner experience.
Uh-huh.
And having redirected my attention to my inner experience, I could be in relationship with myself and get into the flowing and the safety and the curiosity.
Yes.
That kind of drew me out from mm-hmm. the sense of danger into using mm. more my mindful circuits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. and be more mindfully engaged, more, mm-hmm. you know, social engagement kind of mindfulness
mm-hmm.
That then unlocks that rigidity.
Yes.
And so, if I had to even summarize my summary, it would be to say that the intentionality of paying attention to inner experience mm-hmm. allowed me to connect to my social engagement circuit.
Yeah.
And be more present with myself and therefore more fluid mm-hmm. In interaction with the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it really brings out how important it is for us to be open to our own vulnerability. Or to acknowledge, to have a space, I guess, to acknowledge our own grappling with a particular perception, a fear, and to be able to unpack that. And it makes me think of really how important all of that is to, I tend to think in large sets also,
mm-hmm.
Systemically, how important that is to the viability of our democratic way of life, the viability of a fully functioning society, let's say,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A flourishing society,
yeah,
vital society,
yeah,
of the kind that America in some ways represents a great experiment. How do we coexist with these various contrasting and even contradictory elements
mm-hmm.
if we can't do that within ourselves, if we can't stay with or unpack the more of what's going on and of who we are.
Yeah, yeah. So as you're saying this, I find, let me just take a moment.
Mm-hmm.
The response or the resonance it has for me is if I go to asking the question at a societal level, I get a sense of overwhelm
mm.
because it feels like there's so much
mm-hmm.
that is on autopilot in a way of you know, self-fulfilling and increasing mm-hmm. that I have a sense of mostly helplessness.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. If I focus on the other thing, to say, okay, but the one thing I have control over, power mm-hmm. over, mm-hmm. is healing that split inside
mm-hmm.
and dealing with it, then I'm coming to a more grounded place.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And from that place, the question doesn't seem like an either or, but more of a starting point
yeah.
for potentially larger action.
Yes.
Is to start from that more grounded place, because without it, it's not really possible to do much.
Yes. And I think this is the value of groups like Better Angels and what I call experiential democracy dialogue, where we're beginning with ourselves
mm-hmm.
and really attempting to ground this challenge in our own beings and work with, like you say, work with what we can to some degree control, although I'm a little suspect of that term, but
yes,
but I mean it in the sense that you meant it of
that we have a little bit more impact on or a little bit more grip on.
Yeah, work with what we can manage. Yeah, we you know have some ability to affect
mm-hmm.
directly. Yes,
but so you had a phrase that now I forgot, but something about bring this to our own experience, our own embodied experience, or something mm-hmm. like that. When you used it, what it evoked for me is instead of paying attention, focusing on the content, the ideas, the ideology, the positions, you know, mm-hmm. The coming to personal embodied experience, when we have an exchange, say that way, and at least part of the focus mm-hmm. is that we have embodied experiences, and that probably, while the content is very different, the embodied experience might be more similar. That brings us to a place where, in a way, we're more likely to experience each other as struggling with a similar process.
That's
and
true.
Defending, you know, positions that are diametrically opposed.
Yes. Yes, it really brings up the commonality, the humanity of people together.
Like we're two human beings. I don't mean you and I, because we probably are coming from a similar, more similar perspective than diametrically opposed. But in a discussion, that's the experience of you and I being two fellow human beings dealing with the human challenges of overwhelming questions and finding ourselves in difficult positions.
Yes. And again, speaking from some of these group experiences, I have found that very gratifying
mm-hmm.
to connect with, even if it's one other person or the group, in those ways of all of us, exposing more of who we are with each other and relating
to
common human struggles.
So I want again to seize on a word you say, a phrase you say, exposing more of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a period a few years ago when first, after the 2016 election, where a lot of the stuff that was going on is among people who were liberal, progressive, a sense of you have to make an effort to understand the other people. Mm-hmm. But as if it had to do with, in a way, we need to open up, or, you know, almost an element of condescension about it, or conversely, an element that we had to be reeducated by the masses in some way, like in communist China. but that the notion you're bringing up is a notion of being peer-to-peer with vulnerability, and that the idea is not a sense of listening to something else in order to be re-educated or broadening, but a sense of stepping to a level of vulnerability that invites or makes it easier for the other person to also be vulnerable so that a real dialogue can happen.
Yes, good point, because the former way sounds quite distant and elitist.
Yeah.
As if I'm going to tell you that this is how you have to function or think.
Yeah.
Whereas the latter is just more mutual.
Yeah.
And we're all in this together. At some level, we truly are. I mean,
we truly are.
I'm fond of pointing this out with all our fancy theories and our views and sophistications, quote unquote, or certainties. You know, we're really just attached to a ball that's whirling around the sun at 60-some thousand miles per hour that's hurtling off into a cosmos that no one knows where the ending is. And, I mean, we're literally suspended
So if you take that idea of something, you know, so similar to, say, being adrift on the rafts leaving the Titanic, but so the sense of, in that sense of extreme danger, there is a tendency to panic and to and for panic to prevent us from harmonizing our efforts.
Yes, exactly.
And so this is a sense of not yielding or giving up, but a sense of organizing ourselves to function better.
Yes, the relevant question is, so how are we going to respond here?
Yeah.
Rather than react, I would draw a difference between the two. Responding being more pauseful, more whole-bodied.
Yeah.
In perceiving. Also with an aspiration of really desiring to live to our capacity, given the very bizarre gift that we've been bestowed, you know?
Yeah.
It truly is a gift in so many ways.
Yeah. So this feels like a good place to end. I just want to see if you want to add something or if we leave it at this.
Well, I think this is a good place to come to a close. I'm not sure how best to summarize the process that we have gone through, but I do feel like we've gone through. You've really helped us to embody and concretize so much that I've been writing about, and not in a completely abstract way by any means, but I think you've really helped us bring it into the present moment between us. It's very personal, it's very intimate, and really vividly illustrates how it does begin there. That's core to any more substantive way of viewing the polarized mind or viewing polarization. And it also, I just would say that I feel like we're at a stage in history where perhaps we are ready now to move more toward this kind of intimate sense of democracy, if you will. That we need to develop an inner democracy in order for the outer democracy to more fully flourish. And there are many psychological elements around racism and nationalism and ethnicity, etc., that I think are portending this great need, that we have to go beyond the externals here.
Yeah.
It's not just about physical freedom. It's also about being able to be with one another in new and more fluid ways, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is part of the Relational Implicit podcast. To see more and subscribe to the newsletter, go to relationalimplicit.com.